the most common violation that we see, especially as we move now into this election season, has to do with political activity on duty or in the federal workplace. And mostly it's driven by people's email activity.
That's what I would have guessed had I been forced to guess, because it is now so easy to access your personal emails wherever you go, whether it's on a mobile device that you use in the course of your job, or if I have a Gmail account, I can look at my Gmail account as I'm sitting here. In case my boss is listening, I'm not, but I can. And so it seems that that line has become incredibly blurred because of technology.
That is true, and I think what's important is for federal employees to remember, as we move into this election cycle, that they cannot engage in political activity on duty or in a federal workplace, which means any activity directed at the success or failure of a candidate or campaign, and that would include using not only their government email account or their government computers, but also their own personal gadgets, whether it's their smartphone, their iPad, or any other similar item. If they're at work, on duty, or in the federal workplace, they cannot be engaged in that type of activity.
Is that the defense that people try to use, hopefully and obviously unsuccessfully, but is that the defense that they try to use most of the time, is that it wasn't even on my government computer or whatever?
Sometimes. We still see the majority of the violations that come into the office. Most of those violations are with the use of the government computer. The typical defense is more, I didn't read the complete email that I sent to 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more that they didn't read the email that they forwarded.
The case of the two workers at the Department of Veterans Affairs who are back at work now after their Hatch Act violations, the reporting I have here says both sent emails through their government accounts urging support for President Obama while he was running for office in 2008. Both admitted their transgressions, spent up to 21 days away from their jobs without pay, essentially suspended for 3 weeks or so without pay. Is that pretty typical of the kinds of punishments, or what's the range of punishments for violations of the Hatch Act?
Well, the range in terms, those are cases that we settled. If we had filed complaints with the Merit Systems Protection Board, where we litigate these cases, the actual range for violating the Hatch Act, the penalty provision, is removal, is the presumptive penalty, and it can be mitigated to a suspension with a unanimous vote of the Merit Systems Protection Board, but the low end of that penalty range is no less than a 30-day suspension without pay. So, again, that's your penalty range for violating the Hatch Act, 30-day suspension to removal.
So, essentially, when you say settled, that means these people were approached with the evidence that they of their misconduct. They said, "Yep, we did it." And rather than retaining counsel and going through the legal process at the MSPB, they said, "Yep, we admit we did it," and essentially threw themselves on the mercy of OSC. Is that
in general? Yes. There,
okay.
There were reasons in terms of resources. Showing of remorse, cooperation that would have factored in into informally settling these cases and not filing with the board.
What that says to me, though, Anna, is how seriously your office takes this, because that sounds like the legal process that somebody goes through when they commit a crime. Now, it's certainly not the same kind of punishment necessarily, but it sounds like the same kind of process, and that's what makes it sound so serious to me.
That is correct, and I think that one of the other points here that we haven't really discussed yet is that some, in terms of what federal employees need to keep in mind, is that some of these prohibitions continue outside of the workplace. For example, all federal employees are prohibited from soliciting political contributions, and that prohibition is a 24/7 prohibition. So even if they're on vacation, they're on annual leave, they are still prohibited from soliciting. And when you look at the case law with respect to soliciting, the board takes those violations seriously.
And that pertains to forwarding emails, that pertains to all of those kinds of things, correct?
Whether it's, one-on-one soliciting for a candidate versus sending an email to 50 people that request a donation, or even inviting someone to a fundraiser. All of these examples constitute solicitation.
Anna, we're almost out of time, and I apologize for having to cut this short because of our breaking news this afternoon, but what are some of the other activities that you see often that kind of make you slap your head and go, what were they thinking? What, where it doesn't seem like somebody was using common sense.
Well, we've seen a rise in the number of cases involving supervisors advising, requesting, or suggesting how their subordinates should vote, which, again, it's one of those where you think they should know better.